Welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. Eric Steven, you have news for me.
You know, I just thought about this. Like, we could be one of these, if like my notes like went down, I all of a sudden I'd revert to the SNL skit of Wake Up Miami or whatever the heck the morning show was, mm-hmm. where their teleprompter died and then they just like devolved into chaos immediately. And like I just had this panic where I couldn't tab over to the notes in time, and like I have an idea what we're going to talk about, but like there's just this momentary panic, and all I could think of was Will Ferrell holding up, I believe David Alan Grier was in that skit, in that sketch, and he like severed his head and he holds his head up and he goes, "The weatherman is dead." So that's what we're going to talk about today on the podcast.
Like you mentioned, we actually have some news to go over, so we're going to go over that. But we still have a Dodgers Rewind. We still have questions from Greg. You still have a trivia question I'm barely going to even attempt to answer. I'm going to try, but I get so defeated knowing I'm always going to get them wrong. So, but we're going to have one anyways, and I do that for the audience.
You're a good trooper there.
And we'll do all of that after this.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You ready? Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I've gotten to the point where whenever I have to say something like, during these times, I just capitalize these times so everyone knows. Mm-hmm. I mean, with Corona and COVID all going around, but one of the interesting little changes is my Twitter timeline. Whereas middle of May, any other year, the density of a tweet about baseball, we're like 50% maybe. Is my timeline is baseball news. Whereas now, even changing no one I'm following, it's 95%. Virus stuff. Maybe it's more like 98, and only a small portion of which is about the baseball stuff. So I this will be, some of this will be news to me, and I'm excited to for you to tell me what the story is.
So I was thinking too, now that you mentioned that, what if the Foo Fighters, like I saw like Dave Grohl, I believe, or maybe it was the Foo Fighters like main account, just tweeting about how awesome it's going to be once like concerts will happen again and live shows and stuff, and then like to prepare for that. Obviously it's not going to happen for a while. But like, it was a pretty inspirational, even it was just a tweet, you know, but like, it was pretty cool. But I was wondering, like, what if times like these by the Foo Fighters can be the anthem of the current the current time? Maybe they could be like the Smash Mouth of coronavirus, in a way that it just like has enduring, you know, for years to come. Who knows? But I guess they're doing okay. They probably don't need my advice on that. But yeah, so there's like a probably like three different sort of things going on, and it's all kind of in the same umbrella, you know, players and owners still sort of going back and forth talking. Like, you know, we talked a little bit about the money aspect of it, and MLB hasn't technically like presented like a plan to the players yet in terms of like, we want you to take a 50-50 split or whatever, you know, thing. They haven't like proposed that yet. They've just been like exchanging ideas. And so like, that was part of the reason I think last week I was 83.7% that season's going to happen. And I still think that's roughly the case because, you know, they're negotiating in reasonable good faith. But that said, there's some sort of newsy type things that came out. One was MLB sent like this, I believe it was 67 pages of like a safety and testing protocol, basically like the rules of like what's going to happen if they start playing again. And like, it's very comprehensive, but at the same time, they like warned that, you know, hey, this is just first draft. We're just talking about it. That's what they're sort of talking about. But there's so many like little things that stand out, like no spitting. Like, can you imagine a baseball game without spitting? Like, it's involuntary. No sunflower seeds, like, even. No high-fiving, no hugging. Understandable, no, like, the hugging. Yeah. So, like, it's going to be... And then also, I believe no fighting is in there. And so, like, you have this, like, weird scenario where...
Astro like, fans.
Yeah, like...
Wonderfully happy.
Jose Altuve hitting leadoff, or probably George Springer hitting leadoff, gets hit. Can't charge the mound because they'll get like majorly, like overly suspended by MLB for like once. Violating protocol and stuff. So, but then there's also like little things too. They mentioned pitchers would use their own personal baseballs during like bullpen sessions.
Ooh.
And like, so I had this like idea that they're like the chefs of baseball, and they like, who care, like chefs carry around their own knives, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, you could have this, like, little, like, foldable case of baseballs that the pitchers just sort of roll out, and then they unwind it, and they take it out, and it's very, they're very meticulous about it, and, like, they have to have their baseballs a certain way, and then you could have, like, baseball sharpeners that they carry around. I don't know. Then also, like, you know, there's obviously serious things in here. Like, they're testing, like, I think it's three times a week. I forget the exact number. And then... their daily temperature checks like multiple times, and players are expected to do things at home too. If you're sick, you won't be like let in. I think if you're running a fever, if you test positive, they try to like trace like who you've been around and like, you know, possibly, you know, remove you from there. They're not going to like shut down if a positive test happens. I think they would do their best to just like quarantine the players, and then, but then you also, they're expecting the players to like police themselves. Like they said, we're not going to restrict you. Like the Arizona plan, the big hang up there was like, everyone's going to be sequestered in a hotel and you can't do anything. Like you could do stuff, but like they don't want you to like go out to bars basically. And like, or, you know, and so, but then there's all the little thing that like sort of caught my eye was no showering at the stadium. That's insane. Like, but like, it probably has to happen, but it makes me think back to like Little League and or like high school baseball where you just might wear your uniform home.
Yeah. Pick up a pizza on the way.
Yeah. And so like but like major leaguers, like they shower like multiple times a day. Like, you know, after like running or batting practice or something, they might shower before the game. Then they'll shower after the game. At the same time, like on a fireworks night, when all the fans are still in the stands once the game ends, players will bolt and like dress immediately and get out of there because they can beat the traffic. So like, it happens, but that's just like a weird thing that you take for granted that like, if that's going to happen. And again, it's this like early phase of like talking about stuff, but that's that it's going to be like so different.
And once, it like, should be noted because I've had some friends ask me, you know, like what's baseball looking like thus far? And let me know, and maybe this is different, but the news I have seen so far is definitive Major League Baseball and owner posturing. Trying to like kind of beat up. We have a plan. This can happen. And I haven't seen a whole lot of movement on the players end yet. A lot of we want to play and we want this to happen, but we have to find out. Is that still the case, or has there been movement there?
Yeah, I think part of that is because I don't like the owners haven't technically proposed anything
right.
to the players.
That's what I'm saying. Like we haven't said. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like they haven't said, here's our plan. What do you think? And then, like, there's nothing to, like, approve or, like, you know, so they're still in, like, the talking phase. Now, the other thing is, like, these are for games to happen in home stadiums. And to do that, you have to have, like, the cities and the states where these teams play on board. And, like, you know, California has been on the aggressive side in terms of like, probably just in terms of other states in the United States about like being enforcing social distancing and things like that. They're starting to like open things up a little bit, but also they're sort of keeping in line with testing. And I guess the coronavirus numbers, the governor today, Gavin Newsom, he had a press conference and he said basically the total number of coronavirus cases has gone down, the total number of like folks in the ICU has gone down. The big concern about the virus is like the virus itself, obviously so many people are dying from it, but also that if it spikes too much, then you'll overwhelm like the hospital system because they're not equipped to handle that many people in the ICU or needing ventilators. And then so people with other diseases cannot get properly treated. And then it just creates like this chaos and it becomes even worse. And I think that's the concern about all this. But those numbers are improving. And then today, Gavin Newsom said explicitly that if the numbers continue on that path, you could see a scenario where professional sports can return in the state of California as early as the first week of June. Now, most of the baseball plans, they sort of want to start like July 4th, and then they'll probably have like a 2 to 3 week spring training. And so like that helps in terms of like whether they have this, they might have spring training like in Arizona and Florida, but those states like last week, those governors have been much more aggressive. They're like, hey, our state's open, let's go, yay. And then so we'll see what's gonna happen, but they're also part of the protocols with that too. They're not gonna have like full a lot of full team workouts, and they'll like split it off into smaller groups and things. And I think only a handful of games, for spring, for exhibition style. But also like one of the things too, is like people like having to separate in the dugout and in the locker room. So like basically like every team is going to have to build like auxiliary clubhouses, like for both home and visitors, because like the Dodger Stadium clubhouse, I forget exactly how many lockers are in there. I think it's like 46. Something like that. I counted at one point. I don't remember exactly. And this is, it's a pretty standard size locker room now, I would imagine. It has good enough room. But like if you have six people 6 feet apart, you're going to have essentially a whole nother probably room that size, to handle everybody. And then in the dugout, like that means like probably people who aren't like involved in the game are going to have to like sit in the stands perhaps. Or something like that, but there's not going to be fans there, so maybe it won't be as weird. But like this, obviously, a lot of work in progress type thing. So that's where they're sort of at right now. But like again, they're not at a point where anything's being approved. I think the the back and forth will start coming, but we're not there exactly yet.
The one bit of news I did see, and luckily it's in the show notes, otherwise you would be without the teleprompter, Eric.
That's so, right. What do we do?
Was this goes back to my earlier point of so much of the news that we've been getting outside of Governor Newsom's announcement is posturing by the owners, not necessarily in bad faith, but certainly, you know, they're trying to get their first foot in the door and kind of make their proposals sort of the assumption of what fans goes. And to that, they're sort of claiming that, hey, if this doesn't happen, we're going to lose billions of dollars.
Yeah. So, like, you know, we talked about this, I think, a little bit before, where the crux of the players' argument is that they already agreed to prorated salaries based on the season. So if it's an 82-game season, they get roughly half their salary. That's, you know, relatively normal. What MLB's claiming is under that plan, and then if they have to do games with no fans, the games would be so, like, onerous on them. Onerous, get it? It would be, like, cost prohibitive for them to even hold baseball. Essentially, they haven't explicitly said that, but like they included in a PDF or whatever they sent over to the players. Here's our numbers, right? And so the Associated Press, I believe, had this first, and the general like gist of this was that under the current system, every game MLB holds with no fans, the league loses $640,000 on average each game. Those numbers don't add up because like there's this one chart, like the Yankees and the Dodgers are the two biggest like losers in this. Based on that, it makes sense. The larger markets, they're going to make the most. So, you know, it would make sense that they also lose the most if the revenue is affected as it is. But a little caveat in the chart they used was not included in this is $1.34 billion in I believe it was national revenue or whatever, however they termed it. That's billion with a B. So essentially it boils down to they didn't include the national television contracts, the equivalent of that, roughly. So if you do that, that wipes out most of the supposed losses. And like the whole there's pieces out today. I'll link to these all in the show notes. Maury Brown at Forbes, Craig Edwards at Fangraphs, and Rob Maines at Baseball Prospectus, they all broke down like the sort of the flaws in this, and they're all like compelling arguments basically that MLB is cooking the books a little bit here, or at least presenting a face. Like, imagine this is a timeshare PowerPoint, like they're trying to sell you on that. That's roughly what it seems like. So Kyle Gleiser of Baseball America noted that MLB counted, I believe it was 440 something million as an expense for amateur talent. That includes both the draft and international spending. Now, keep in mind that MLB shortened the draft to 5 rounds this year. So, and then it's only $20,000 per player for anyone who wasn't drafted. And this is, even if you count, I believe, all the signing bonuses, like the signing, the slot, the bonus slot values, like add up to like, what is it? $160 million, I think. And even if you count all of that in this year, which is fine, another thing MLB is doing is 90% of this is all deferred to 2021 to 2022. So they only have to actually pay 10% of that this year. But even if you include the full 160, then add in the international spending, the expected international spending, I believe Kyle's numbers, and I'll link to his tweet thread here too, he said that there would have to be a total of 1,650 undrafted free agents signed at the maximum 20,000 to make up the gap to get to the 440 million. So again, MLB is overestimating an expense and then underestimating income to get its numbers to look more favorable to them. And so what MLB's final claim is in all this is if they do the season as is with players getting prorated salary and then the reduced revenues, they will lose $4 billion. And that doesn't, like, hold a lot of water. There was another sort of point here that Greg Oeders at Fangraphs noted. In MLB's report, it says their total, like, bottom line net, like, income, basically, has been within, like, $250 million of break-even. They're basically saying on a normal year, they're, like, running close to even. And, you know, he looked at sort of the last 4 years, basically, that total payroll hasn't really moved, whereas revenues, you know, through reasonably reported means, have increased by about $1 billion. So that doesn't hold a lot of water. And then that doesn't even account for, like, the increases in franchise value. And he says over the last 4 years, the total, like, franchise value gains are roughly between $5 and $7 billion. And so that's part of, like, the sort of frustration in all this is that it's just getting – it's an accounting trick, basically. And it's getting presented like this where I think the players will see through it. But – and again, I think they are – they're – you know, there's a lot at stake for both sides. I think they will end up making some sort of a deal, but that's sort of what we're dealing with. And again, they're not even at the point where they're necessarily arguing over this yet. I'm sure that'll come soon enough, but, and it kind of has to, if they're going to start spring training in the middle of June, they have to sort of figure this out relatively soon, but that's sort of where we're at in terms of all this, together. But yeah, that's sort of where we're at right now, I guess.
It'll be one thing, a proposal that you and I had kind of bandied around is, oh, they could maybe start with the All-Star game.
Oh, yeah.
And that could be really cool. But if it's without fans, you wonder if L.A., which is going to have the All-Star game this year, is like, we want a fan-attended All-Star game. And, you know, they have to figure that out.
Yeah, I guess I haven't seen specifically. I don't think that... it doesn't sound like the All-Star game is going to happen this year without fans. And, like, it seems like every proposal, it's like a brand new schedule. They're not going to just pick up where they left off because it's going to be a revised schedule and things like that. But it sounds like the All-Star game is kind of dead this year and that the Dodgers would just get the next possible year would be 2022. But, like, there is sort of, you know, on some merit, even as a TV event, it would be cool to see the All-Star game to start the year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at this point, like, that's probably, like, it's just not going to happen,
yeah.
Realistically, at least. Nothing official has come down on that yet, but it just sounds like that's too far gone to even sort of plan for at this point.
Well, we're going to take a little break, but I know you want to challenge me beforehand.
Yeah. So I won't say who it is, but our Dodgers Rewind, he is one of 8 Dodgers infielders with a season of double-digit home runs, triples, and doubles. In the same season.
Mm-hmm.
How many of the other 7 can you name?
I will attempt to do that. 2.86 after this.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So all Dodgers infielders, not just L.A.
Yep. Yep.
Double-digit, a triple-double, if you will.
Yes, and I'll even give you a hint here.
Yep.
This person who did it in 1959
yep.
is the last Dodger infielder to do it. He's the only LA Dodger to do it.
Okay, so
infielder.
My preamble for this was when you think of this, the trick is triples, right? You're hitting 10 doubles and home runs.
Yeah,
plenty of players in the modern era and previous older eras have done that. So it's almost how many Dodger infielders have hit 10 triples. Obviously, it's not exactly because you have to have a little bit of pop as well. Yeah. So I quickly realized, okay, the era of the triple is an older thing. I definitely thought there were going to be some in the LA history. So I did cheat a little bit because I wanted to look up I just looked at the triples column. I didn't look elsewhere. Like how many were a player like Davey Lopes, how many was he hitting? By the way, not enough. That's what I found out. So one name right off the bat that I would have guessed and would have been Ron was Gil Hodges. Not the case. Mm-hmm. So those Davey Lopes and Gil Hodges were the two names that I looked up. So now we're on my own. Uh-huh. I'm fearful. I don't think I'm going to get very many. Rafael Furcal, I think, was the one name I was going to throw out. But
he would have been someone I would have probably guessed. You mentioned Gil Hodges. His high in triples was 7,
yeah,
which he did twice. But yeah.
So let's try Pee Wee Reese.
No,
yeah.
He is not on. I was going to look up.
He would be an issue where the home run probably was more of the issue than the triple.
He actually does. No, he has more home runs than triples in his career. He hit 10 triples once in 1946, but he hit 5 home runs. Oh, man, he had 2 seasons where he obviously made it in doubles, but he had 2 seasons where he had 8 triples and 10 home runs. He had another season with 8 triples and 6 home runs, so like just falling short. So he's close, but yeah.
Okay, Jackie Robinson was my best guess.
Yeah, so he's won for sure. He did it in 1949, the year he won MVP. He led the league in steals and sacrifice bunts that year. But 38 doubles, 12 triples, and 16 home runs. What a year! I don't think you're gonna get any.
I was hoping Pee Wee Reese would have gotten there.
So I was struck on this because I was originally thinking because our Dodger Rewind is gonna be a middle infielder, and I was expecting there to be a lot of middle infielders there.
Oh, I have one more baseman. Guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Charlie Neal.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, he's our Dodger Rewind.
I can read the show notes.
So there's a ton of first basemen. So Dolph Camilli, first baseman, did it 3 times, 1938 to 40. Del Bissonnette, 1929 to 1931, also a first baseman. 1928 to 1931, 4 straight years. Jack Fournier, did we talk about on a previous Dodger Rewind? I could look it up. I won't. 1923 and 1925. Babe Herman played like all the corners, or at least first base, right field, and left field in 1926.
Babe Herman is someone I think I probably could have guessed if you had given me an hour.
Right, exactly. And then someone who I have literally never heard of before, Harvey Hendrick. He played mostly
Dodger
third.
Dodger Rewind.
Yeah, mostly third, but also center field and left. And then Glenn Wright, who I'm sure I've talked about on here before. He's the Dodger shortstop besides Corey Seager to hit 20 home runs as a shortstop in a season. And the year that he did it, 1930, he also had 12 triples and 28 doubles. So those are the guys. And then, before I get into Charlie Neal, the one guy, I always love this, like the triple double, as you called it. Juan Samuel for me was this because I started collecting baseball cards in like 85. So you have like 84 stats on the back. And Juan Samuel was a rookie. And I was enamored that he led the league in at bats. I thought that was a thing, right? Like, I thought that made him cool. It also just meant that he played all the time, but he also didn't walk. And so he led the league in at bats and triples as a rookie, also strikeouts. He led the league in strikeouts his first 4 years, and that ended up sort of being his downfall a little bit. Although, look, he played 16 years in the majors. He had a 101 OPS. He was a league average hitter for a decade and a half. That's awesome, right? Mm-hmm. But so his first 4 years, he had his lowest was 12 triples. His lowest was 15 home runs. He averaged over those 4 years 102 runs, 35 doubles, 15 triples, and 20 home runs, and 51 steals. Like, he was an absolute stud. But then if you dig deeper, he didn't walk enough. He struck out a bunch, and, like, his defense was there were holes. But, like, and then he came to the Dodgers, and then his high with the Dodgers for triples was 6. So, like, he kind of lost it after those first couple years in terms of hitting triples. He hit 9 in 1988 with the Phillies, but... Yeah, so I was enamored with him back then, and that was sort of my entree into the triple-double. Well, I guess besides our friend Magic Johnson. So Charlie Neal, he played 6 seasons in the minors with the Dodgers before debuting for Brooklyn at age 25 in 1956. So his deal was he was mostly a second baseman. He played a little shortstop too. But the infield at that time had Pee Wee Reese at short. It had Jim Gilliam either at third or second, and then Jackie Robinson sometimes at second, and then those guys both moved around. So there wasn't really a spot for Charlie Neal for a while. He sort of had 3 seasons as a regular with the Dodgers. They were solid. They were slightly above average offensively. He averaged 102 OPS plus in those years, 18 homers, 17 doubles, 8 triples, 12 steals, and 3.3 WAR. His Saber bio quotes sports writers annually named him the fastest man on the team and praised his lightning double play pivot at second base. When Pee Wee Reese moved to third base in 1957, Neal was the shortstop, but then Neal moved to second base for 58 and 59. So his 1959 Topps card, which I pulled out, I have it in the podcast post for this. It says on the back, the leader in double plays for shortstops in 1958, Charlie was originally a second baseman. That's sort of true, except that he didn't lead the league in double plays as a shortstop in 58 because he didn't play shortstop enough. He led the league in double plays for a second baseman. His shortstop year was 57, so that was weird. But he did lead the league in double plays as a second baseman in 1958. And in 1959, so, like, you know, they were half right, I guess. I don't know. So when he moved to second base in 1958, he hit 22 home runs and then 19 the next year. Those were the 20 of those 22 were as second baseman. So those were the 2 best years home run wise by a Dodger second baseman forever. And then they still, like, are third and tied for third, tied for fifth. Davey Lopes hit 28 home runs in 1979 to break it, and then Jeff Kent matched that in 05, and then Jeff Kent had a 20 home run year as a second baseman in 07, and then Jackie Robinson had 2 years of 19 home runs. So those are, like, the top second base home run years. Charlie Neal also had the first LA Dodger hit in history in their first game at San Francisco as a second inning single against Ruben Gomez. His sort of claim to fame for them was the 59 World Series. Larry Sherry got the most valuable player. I wrote about that team. It's underdog week at SB Nation this week, so I wrote about the 59 Dodgers today. Larry Sherry was a pitcher. He was, like, their closer, even though they didn't have closers. I guess their ace reliever. He closed out all 4 wins for the Dodgers. He saves weren't a thing back then, but retroactively he got 2 saves and 2 wins. He allowed, like, 1 run in almost 13 innings. So he was MVP, but Charlie Neal was close. He hit 370, 2 home runs, 6 RBIs, 2 doubles. He basically was instrumental in, like, 3 of their wins. He has the 4th most total bases by a Dodger in a World Series with 18. Duke Snider has 24 first. His 10 hits, Charlie Neal was tied for 4th in Dodger history in a World Series. Maury Wills, Ron Fairley in 1965, and Bill Russell in 1978 had 11. So he's, like, right there. The Dodgers traded Charlie Neal to the Mets right before their inaugural 1962 season. And then getting back to that triple-double, Charlie Neal led the National League in triples in 1959 with 11. He was actually tied with Wally Moon, his teammate. So pretty good stuff. That's Charlie Neal.
And now it's time for...
With Gene and Craig. We love them.
5 crush. I did this like a few weeks ago. Questions. Craig questions is what I'm like forcing down my windpipe. So 5 questions. I'm just going to leave it at that. Following up on who will bat ninth if there's a DH in 2020, Cubs catcher Giovanni Soto was the last position player, NL Rookie of the Year, awardee in 2008, to bat more times in the bottom half of the lineup than the top four spots. Eric, this is for you. Can you name the six LA Dodger position players who won the Rookie of the Year batting more times in the bottom half than the top four spots? Here's a hint. One threesome did it one decade, and another threesome did it in another decade, which is not much of a hint if you know much about Dodger rookies.
So, yeah, I was thinking about this. Like, I was sort of, like, stuck on the hint, I think. But, so I think I will go with, Jim LaFever.
Yep.
I always forget which one's the actor and which one's the player. I think it's Ted Sizemore.
Yep.
between Ted and Tom's the actor. The only other Rookie of the Year I can think from the 60s is Frank Howard in 1960.
You got it.
Yeah. So that's that. And then, then it becomes a thing where, so the first big streak for them was, this is easier than I thought. Wait, well, no, maybe not. Okay, so it has to be the 80s. So Fernando, he said position players. Mm-hmm. He said position players. So, okay. I was going to say, because, like, Steve Howe barely batted. So that confused me. So it's not Piazza, because he was, like, right in the middle of the lineup. Really? All right, hold on. Well, I wasn't going to answer Piazza anyway, so I'll just say Karros, Hollinsworth, and Mondesi, since that was going to be my answer. I wasn't going to guess Piazza.
Bringing it up, it is Piazza, Mondesi, and Hollinsworth.
Huh.
And I'm trying to find this Mike Piazza in 1992, how often he batted for you, which we can do.
93, yeah.
Yeah. Click. If there is a DH, that does remove one potential pinch hitting spot. Will the 2020 Dodgers average more or less than two pinch hits per game? Only in 1965, when there was an LA Dodger team who averaged less than one pinch hitter per game with 157 pinch hitting plate appearances. For example, both in 2017 and 2018, the Dodgers averaged more than two per game.
So I think it's going to be pretty clearly below two. I don't know if it's going to be like plummet. They're still going to pinch hit for guys. Like, the only thing is you can't move the DH to another position. So, but they're still going to be like, you know, if Kike's playing left, they might move him to short at some point and, like, you know, maneuver other guys that way. And then pinch hit for whoever. So they're still going to pinch hit, but not, well, obviously not as much as they would with a pitcher in the lineup. But I think it's just going to be, less than two, but more than one per game.
Going back to Mike Piazza real quick, he batted fifth a lot. And that's why.
Fifth. Okay. In my head, I wasn't thinking of fifth. Yeah, you're right. I messed up on that.
We're going half. So.
Yeah.
Do you think there will be any opportunities for writers such as True Blue LA's Eric Steven to cover the Dodger Stadium's live at the games this year?
I think yes, but I would imagine, like, given what,
just
what,
wearing, like, hazmat suits.
Yes, get what, like, baseball's negotiating right now. Like, we're so far down the list of, like, things that they're caring about. It's part of the CBA. They need to provide, like, reasonable access. So I'm sure there'll be something, whether it's like pregame and postgame manager scrum, probably in a controlled setting.
Get a section of the stadium.
Yeah, but like the thing that's gonna, you can't really do, I would imagine there's gonna be no clubhouse time. So, but that it's gonna put the onus on teams to make players available as needed, which is going to be weird. But then also, do you get a one-on-one? Because it's hard to do that in a private spot. But it's no different than a locker room. But if you're like, if they have to like come out to the field or something, and so you can sort of carve out a space, but you still have to be like 6 feet away, presumably. So like, it's going to be this weird. So when this happened, like, you know, did this, like, so I don't know, it's going to be weird.
No, just yell really loudly from your section in reserve.
Well, also there's going to be the thing. So like a normal press box, right? Like I would imagine you can only probably have like a third of the people in there if you have to like socially distance. But then again, they have like the suites that are on the same level that you could just kind of put people in those, you know, writers with the same sort of idea. So I think that's totally doable in terms of like just being there in person. It'll be a challenge for sure. But there's definitely going to be people there covering games. And I plan to do it if that's going to be allowed. But yeah, I just think there's going to be weird logistics about it. But yeah, no question, there's going to be some form of like coverage doing that.
Jacob, have you thought about a playlist for your child's nursery yet? And if there was one performer you hope to share with his child, who would that be? He's got a part for you. I have to think about this now. Not really. Yeah. On the nursery tour video that we did, I played Kenny Loggins' Return to Pooh Corner, which is a very nostalgic, something my mother used to play when I was worried or stressed out as a kid. So there'll be a little bit of that. Good old Kenny Loggins. Maybe right into Danger Zone, right? Back to back. Other than that, I have a long list. I'm trying to be democratic about it, but Melissa and I's taste in music is different. In that,
she's big gangster rap. Gangster rap.
She's East Coast. She doesn't have a lot of strong opinions on popular music. That's what I'll say.
Yeah.
So whereas I have a lot. So I was told that when I was a fussy baby, Madonna is what calmed me down. I don't know if I'll be playing Madonna, but maybe some Carly Rae Jepsen, some sort of modern equivalent.
Nice.
But yeah, I once ask this question a gig, Craig, in 3 or 4 months, and I'll let you know what's actually working. Because I'm planning on kind of playing a bunch and seeing what seems to be clicking and then diving deep on that.
Yeah.
Oh, you have a question. I was like, why aren't you answering this?
No, I was.
What are you expecting to play for my child, Eric?
Yeah. Weird Al, obviously.
Eric, do you think your siblings inspired your musical tastes before or after you became an adult?
So it was definitely before. I don't think they were doing any like, they weren't like placing headphones over me as an infant or something, but I'm certain my brother's older brother Kelly and oldest brother Kelly, also older brother Greg, they were prevalent, so much so that there's a famous incident in our family, or to me at least. No one probably else cares about it. My brother Greg, I believe I somehow at 8, I don't know how this happened because I didn't have any money, but I purchased the Tom Petty cassette Hard Promises, and somehow my brother convinced, he was 18 and I was 8, and he can, or maybe it was 17 and 7 or whatever at the time, he convinced me to trade him that cassette for a blank cassette. and I obviously this took it because
it could be anything.
Yeah, right. It could be the box. Yeah, no, so yeah, that was a bad deal. But like, I would say I like Tom Petty and Bruce Springsteen because of them. But I don't think they were like that forceful. They were just always listening to it. And I thought, hey, what are they listening to? That's cool. And they listened to other stuff that probably didn't get into. So like, it wasn't like forced down upon me, but it was definitely influenced. I will say this, my brother Kelly, he has 4 kids. His 2 oldest kids have kids. He has a total of 3 grandsons, and they're all really young now. I think age range from 1 to 3. And he sent us, Kelly sent a text the other day saying when all the his grandsons were babies, the first thing he sang to them was Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen. And he would sing it to them like the first time he held them. And I guess his daughter, the oldest of those grandsons, was like running around the house yesterday. She sent him a video and he's just going, "Born down in a dead man's town." And he was like so proud. And I thought, so maybe my brother did that to me and I just didn't know it. But I just thought that was hilarious that he's indoctrinating another generation of Bruce Springsteen fans.
The final question, the food question. Let's talk about potato chips. Do you prefer chips with smooth texture, ridges, or kettle styled? And do you prefer flavored or plain old potato flavor? I like the idea of potato flavored. It's I don't know if you've ever seen that, but they're like I saw it at a pharmacy. Was at that? It was chocolate flavored chips. I'm like, no,
yeah,
that's not good. You don't need to have a lot of chocolate to pass that bar.
So like, I love potato chips. They're really good generally, but I there's a weird thing where I think the ridges is what I prefer the most. Mm-hmm. And so, and like it's weird because I've tried like it's all the same company. I don't know why they even bother making this, but they make Wavy Lays when Frito-Lay has Ruffles. And like,
Like they're a little different maybe.
They are a little different, there but like go. Also worse than Ruffles. So I like Ruffles like far more than I like regular Lays or Wavy Lays. I am not a huge fan of kettle style chips. They are like generally fine to me, whereas I can't stand kettle corn for some reason, even though I like love popcorn. Oh man, speaking of this, I this week, so I had two cravings this weekend that I wanted. I drove to Portillo's, which is like 25 miles away, to get an Italian beef sandwich. I got a couple of them, not going to lie. So that was great. I was like, man, I want to get movie theater popcorn. I've read some other, like, too far away for me to drive, but like some theaters just opened for like a day or two to just sell concessions because people were missing it. And I thought, that's perfect. I want like trash movie theater popcorn, like that specific taste. But I could just go to Target. So I went to Target last night after watching The Last Dance. It was the last hour they were open. So I was like, man, I'm going to get there. And then I go, and I should have thought of that, about this, but I go there and I get to where normally the like food service counter is. And there's a sign that says, "After March 17th, we've discontinued food service." I was like, no. So no popcorn for me, but I did get some multivitamins, so it wasn't a wasted trip. But in terms of flavors, I like a lot of flavors. Just the plain Ruffles are usually, but also sour cream and onion are wonderful, even though not a big... I say I'm not a big sour cream fan, but they have the most... I love them in terms... almost always related to chips, like either making a dip that's a sour cream base, I'm fine with it, or sour cream and onion chips, I'm fine with. I like barbecue. I even like salt and vinegar, even though those are, you can only take so much of those. That's a strong one. But yeah, I like them all. Don't eat potato chips a ton. That's not true. I'll occasionally get Doritos is probably a different category because they're cheesier and things like that. But yeah, that's all sort of part and parcel. Like I like them all. What about you?
I'm not the biggest chip fan, but it might just be because they are kind of junky and salty. And many of my favorite salty and junky foods are takeout oriented. I haven't been getting it. So they've been filling the void. Sour cream and onion Pringles are a fit favorite of mine, along with Ruffles with French onion dip. Those would be my absolute two go-tos.
So I like Pringles too. I forgot. They're a nice guilty pleasure. They need to figure out a way. Man, imagine if they're already in the awesome can that's not tennis balls or racquetballs. What if they made Ruffles chips that still tasted like Pringles, and that were still like had every quality of Pringle that you know and love, But when you open the can, it smelled like a new set of racquetballs. That would be the most amazing can in history. And man, that's, and like, now that we're thinking about this, I wanna go not only eat chips, but also dip them in some sort of like French onion dip. Yeah. Man, that's gonna happen. So thanks, Craig, for contributing to my culinary, you know, whatever. But yeah, no, that sounds good. I'm gonna go eat that right now. But thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you're eating the chips you enjoy while listening to us. And oh, we're gonna skip next week. Unless like major news happens. So happy Memorial Day, everybody. Do you really say that? That's a weird thing. Whatever. Enjoy. If you have a extended weekend, enjoy it. And we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.